Welcome to Stories After Midnight. Today we're going to be reading, The ship I'm employed on has an unusual protocol. I finally discovered the reasoning behind it, by Stack of Bones from Reddit. I really hope you enjoy this story. Let me know what you thought of it in the comments below or wherever you can leave a comment. I appreciate you for listening, and a huge shout out to my patrons for helping make this episode possible. Let's get started. Morning, sunshine. A gruff voice muttered directly into my ear, followed by a sharp nudge on my shoulder. I turned over and rubbed my eyes, having just awoken from a fairly deep slumber. In particular, one of the deepest slumbers I'd managed in weeks. I checked my watch and promptly released a quiet string of obscenities. "Forgot to set my alarm?" I questioned in abject defeat. The man standing over me was my bunkmate, a salty old fool by the name of Hudson. His long gray beard and worn face were indicative of his countless years at sea, and he was fittingly built like a barrel of whiskey as well. "Hey," he replied, taking a moment to steady his feet. I nearly fell off the edge of the bed, and likewise noticed that half my belongings were now strewn across the room. "Lucky for you, weather's not too rough to work on deck. Got the evening off," he added with a chuckle. "View the gents are having a card tourney in the mess hall. We'll save you a spot," he added before leaving the room. I slowly stood up and retrieved a shirt from the floor, putting it on while grabbing my phone, which had by then slid fully under my bed, balancing my foot as the ship heavily tilted once more. Several other crew were chatting in the hall, who promptly greeted me as I made my way by. The ship again tilted to one side, that time producing an audible creak that echoed through the halls. Despite the proven seaworthiness of the cargo vessel, along with its immense size, storm still put me on edge to a noticeable degree. It was a fear I hadn't been able to shake, even after a full year working on the vessel, something I then attributed to being rather new. Eventually, the echoing of conversation could be heard up ahead. I reached the end of the hall and turned left into the mess hall, where four lunchroom-style tables were occupied by fellow shipmates. Everyone was partaking in various activities, from reading to playing cards, and hounding down leftovers from the previous meal. Hudson was sitting at an occupied table at the end and waved me over. Douglas and Connie were likewise at the table, two other individuals I had become acquainted with throughout my employment on the vessel. Multiple of Hudson's cohorts were there as well, but I scarcely even recalled their names most days. "Hey, Sleeping Beauty has arrived," Hudson jokingly commented. I responded with an exaggerated bow to the group and took a seat, receiving an even further exaggerated round of applause in response that drew the attention of a nearby table. Douglas slid me a pre-dealt hand of cards, and the game began. It was a variation of poker, using salvaged bottle caps as chips. A simple game, but one that occupied quite a bit of our free time. Douglas eventually cleaned house on the first hand, as the rest of us exasperatedly tossed our cards on the table for another to be dealt. "Another day, another win," he teasingly boasted. Another hand was dealt with the same results to our collective dismay. However, the post-game banter was cut short by an announcement over the intercom. "All crew to cabins, all crew to cabins, lights out in 30. An audibly exhausted voice ordered through the speakers overhead. Everyone complied and began filing back through the hallway to the crew quarters. Our table followed suit, despite me somewhat unsure as to the premature ending of the festivities. Connie, evidently noticing my confusion, offered some clarification. "Making the pass tonight, remember?" she added. I checked my phone and quietly cursed under my breath. We were in fact making the pass that night, something the crew simply dubbed rest day. The ship was to make its way through a profoundly safe stretch of the Atlantic that night, one with a track record of consistently calm weather and seas, to such an extent that the majority of the crew was provided that time to rest and recoup after many long and brutal days prior. The captain, in fact, made it mandatory to partake in this rest day, and even went to the extent of distributing sleep medication at the ship infirmary. The reasoning behind it was to ensure everyone was sufficiently recharged for the second half of the trip. Nobody objected, of course, as the captain was well respected and the crew certainly wasn't going to pass up a guaranteed 10 hours of slumber in what was otherwise a rather sleepless environment. However, the medication was distributed earlier in the day, something I had unfortunately missed after catching up on my rest the entire day prior. "Think the infirmary's still open?" I asked Hudson, already knowing the answer. "Nah, rest day for him too," he replied. We reached our cabin and entered it. Hudson closed the door and collapsed onto his bunk at the opposite side of the room. He reached into his pocket and removed a small bag of pills, likewise retrieving a bottle of sufficiently aged apple juice as it rolled across the floor at his bedside. He dropped the medication into the juice and chugged the whole bottle in a single, massive swig. I visibly winced in disgust, having seen that bottle roll across the floor for likely a week prior, but otherwise didn't comment on it. "See you on the other side, lad," Hudson remarked with a humorous salute. He got comfortable and retrieved a book from underneath the covers. Removing a bookmark and picking up where he had evidently left off, I simply retrieved my phone and laid back, starting up a game of chess against the computer, with sleep being well out of the picture. After a couple of games, snoring erupted from the opposite side of the room. I glanced over, being greeted by the slightly less than graceful sight of Hudson deep in slumber, having fallen asleep still holding his book. I simply returned my device to the confines of my pocket and released a deep sigh, fully recognizing that I wouldn't be doing the same anytime soon. If anything, I'd somehow begun feeling more awake since lying down, likely the result of me fully waking up from my extended nap earlier in the day. With all other options exhausted and me wanting to do something other than stare at my device for another 9 hours, I elected to go for a smoke break. I wasn't much of a smoker, but had a single pack for the sole reason of killing boredom when all else failed. As evidence of this, it had lastly roughly a month and was still over half full. I retrieved the carton along with a lighter from my locker before quietly exiting the cabin and making my way towards the topside deck. The ship was no longer rocking, even to the slight extent, suggesting that we'd made our way through the rough weather and onto the pass. However, as a result of the captain's orders, most of the internal lights had been either dimmed or extinguished, making navigating the corridors difficult nonetheless. Eventually, I was able to turn to the right down the hall, where I was greeted by the sealed door to the outside. With some effort, I opened the large bulkhead and exited onto the external walkway, a semi-covered area that provided a clear view down the side of the ship, along with the sea extending on the horizon. The fresh smell of rain was ever-present, and most exterior surfaces were likewise still soaking wet. I leaned on the railing, retrieved a cigarette from the carton, and lit it as I inhaled deeply. Upon looking upwards, I was greeted by a rather unique sight. The sky was filled with the sizable and puffy clouds typically known to bring heavy storms, but they had a noticeably green-yellow tint. Not subtly by any means either, as it reflected off the water in a manner that turned the otherwise clear blue sea into something nearly akin to that of a lake on land. The sun, which was roughly 2 hours away from setting, similarly cast the unique hue across the ship as well, giving everything that sickly green-yellow tint. While this was relatively common on land, as it generally occurred before the arrival of a heavy storm, it generally wasn't spotted that far out at sea. I continued to take in the strange sight, listening to the calm wake as it splashed against the sides of the vessel, before the sound of footsteps around the corner caught my attention. Soon, a rather scrawny individual by the name of Carlo rounded the corner, a cigarette likewise in his hand. He was one of the cooks on board and was a notably reserved individual. He wasn't rude by any means, but always seemed visibly beat down from the job, so I typically limit our interactions to simple greetings. He glanced at me and nodded, with me doing the same. However, he subsequently looked in my direction once more, before offering a somewhat less than polite greeting. "The hell are you doing up?" he questioned in an audibly concerned tone. Somewhat off-put by this, I took a moment to gather my words before responding. "Just crashed all day and missed the memo. Couldn't sleep, so here I am," I responded, gesturing to the still-lit cigarette in my hand. He cursed under his breath before waving me over. "Follow me," he ordered in an audibly exasperated tone, walking back the way he came. I waited a moment, then eventually followed him around the corner and back into the ship. His pace was notably quick, and for a moment I nearly struggled to keep up with him as he turned up a flight of stairs. "So what exactly am I missing here?" I implored, struggling to keep pace. He shook his head and continued up the stairs. "Cap will explain far better than I can," he blandly replied. After making our way up another set of stairs, we reached a carpeted common area with multiple doors on either side of the wall, along with one at the center of the room straight ahead. Carlo opened it and motioned for me to follow as he stepped through. I followed and immediately noticed that it was the bridge of the ship, something a deckhand such as myself generally had no reason to venture into. The captain, a surly individual with a face covered in stubble and noticeable bags under his eyes, sat in a chair towards the front of the room, fixated out the window. The color projected from the clouds likewise made its way through the many windows of the bridge, giving everything in the dimly lit room a comparably sickly hue as that outside. He turned, seeming visibly surprised at my presence, before shaking his head and looking downwards for a moment. Without any introduction or explanation, he looked at me once more before making a vague yet immensely concerning statement. "Well, son, you're about to see some rightly unexplainable crap," he remarked. He checked one of the nearby navigational screens before returning his attention to me. "Got roughly another few miles before we're fully in the pass. Suppose you deserve something of an explanation for then," he added, motioning to a nearby chair. I took a seat and awaited his next sentence with bated breath. "This here is something many generations of sailors have come to know as morning pass. Not as in the beginning of the day, mind you, but rather the act partaken in after losing a loved one, friend, what have you," he explained before pausing. "While this stretch is indeed safe for a vessel of this caliber, many a ship's weren't as fortunate in the earlier days of seafaring," he added, fixating out the window once more. "In fact, this particular stretch claimed a notable amount of souls in particular. As a result, it's rather..." He appeared to collect his thoughts for a moment before continuing. "Haunted. I suppose that's the word for it," he concluded, when he once more glanced at the navigational screen before continuing with slightly more urgency than before. "The reason why you have a lot to sleep through this part isn't to make sure everyone's rested. That's complete buffoonery. It's because this area is a certain and unnatural way of messing with the psyche of those who witness it. Something you'll unfortunately be experiencing right quick," he further explained, tapping his head before likewise tapping my shoulder as well. Before I could implore any further, a shadow was suddenly cast in the room, then another, and then another. Due to the relatively low clearance of the windows, the source wasn't immediately visible from the bridge, but by the time I stood up, at least a dozen or more disrupted the already unnatural light passing through the windows. Neither other individuals in the bridge said a word, and simply directed their attention towards the windows. Noticing a door that presumably led to an exterior walkway to my left, I made my way over and swung it open, stepping out into the salty air. I looked up and immediately noticed multiple small, dark masses, nearly in the hundreds, dotting the sky above us. They weren't birds, as they were unmoving, and had a shape that didn't resemble anything even remotely similar. As I squinted and tried to identify them against the sickly green backdrop of the clouds, I felt a slight tap on my shoulder. Carlo was standing there, and extended a pair of binoculars in his hand towards me. I retrieved them without a second's hesitation, and adjusted their focus toward the strange objects above. It was then that I came to a particularly horrifying conclusion. They certainly weren't birds, or anything expected for that matter. They were people, hundreds upon hundreds of featureless silhouettes, suspended motionless in the sky. I took it in for an extended moment before lowering the binoculars and adjusting the focus once more. Clearly, I thought, clearly those aren't people. However, by the time I once more raised the binoculars, I confirmed that they were indeed alarmingly human silhouettes, with even more than previously now dotting the sky. I silently handed the binoculars back to Carlo and returned inside the bridge, returning to my seat beside the captain. He extended his hand toward me in a seeming attempt at a reassuring gesture, which I reciprocated. "Name's Lachlan, by the way. What's your son?" he questioned. "Adrian," I quietly replied. He nodded in return before pointing to the cigarette I had entirely forgotten that was still in my grip. "Well, Adrian, care for a smoke?" he politely asked. I obliged and handed him one from the carton in my pocket. The three of us stood and made our way to the door, with me hesitating at the threshold for a brief moment. Lachlan, already being outside, gestured upwards before commenting. "They're a bit spooky is all. They'll stay up there for now, no worries," he affirmed with a slight chuckle. I ultimately joined them, and we passed around the lighter, igniting our smokes as we stared at the unearthly scene above us. Lachlan, having finished his quite quickly, dropped it at his feet and stepped on it, with the small filter making an audible sizzle as it hit the rain-soaked deck. With lack of any further questions, Lachlan continued his explanation. Those that traverse the area suggest that those are the many souls whose lives were extinguished along this very stretch, lost, simply searching for a rescue. Some respite that will unfortunately never come, he continued. I presume that on the scarce chance the living pass through this area, that's what they expect us to be, he finally concluded. I didn't say a word and finished my cigarette in complete silence. Briefly thereafter, however, that silence was broken. At first, with a slight, nearly inaudible hum, it gradually increased in volume until within 5 minutes, the noise had ascended to a chorus that filled the air. For lack of a more fitting description, it resembled a choir holding a singular note, unbreaking and perfectly. It possessed a nearly flawless and unwavering pitch. But a discerning ear could very faintly draw individuality from the evident mass of voices. What discerned it from a choir, however, was the completely unnatural nature of it. There wasn't anything that could even be remotely producing that sound, whether natural or not, in the middle of the ocean. Furthermore, not even the most well-trained human vocalist could hope to produce a noise that rang with such an indescribable sorrow and hollow beauty. For a short while, all three of us stood in silence, listening to the chorus of lost souls. Whether out of fear or admiration would likely vary between each of us. But we spoke nary a word nonetheless. Eventually, it began increasing in pitch, first slowly and then at a quickening rate. Carlo released a heavy sigh and proceeded to make his way back into the bridge. Well, that's our cue, Lachlan declared in an exasperated tone, pointing towards the doorway. I obliged and returned to the bridge, with Lachlan following and taking an extra moment to ensure that the door was latched properly. What happens now? I hesitantly asked. Carlo scratched his head and appeared to consider his answer before responding. Well, we really can't sugarcoat this. It's going to be pretty damn scary in a few, he replied before exiting the bridge. Lachlan reviewed multiple screens on board the ship before addressing me without drawing his gaze from the displays. Since you're here, go lend Carlo a hand, yeah? He asked, pointing back towards the door. I simply nodded and rushed out of the room, catching up to Carlo at the stairs. He hardly acknowledged my presence and was visibly moving with a sense of urgency. What exactly do I need to be doing? I questioned, attempting to keep up. Carlo glanced behind him for a moment and before continuing down the stairs. Gotta verify that the outside hatches are sealed. I'll check port. You work on starboard, he responded, as he reached the bottom of the stairs and turned down the corridor. While I was still very much processing everything I had witnessed in such a short window, I went the opposite direction and began checking the hatches as ordered. Every bulkhead I came across was already sealed, making my job rather easy. Halfway through, however, the ship began to lean and creak as it did before. It began rather slowly, but soon escalated to such an extent that traversing the corridors became a clear challenge. Eventually, I made it to the door I had exited from during my initial smoke break. To my dismay, it was still open, with an overpowering gust of wind practically making me lose my balance on approach. I briefly peered through the doorway, immediately taking note of the quickly darkening skies, along with increasingly turbulent seas. I grabbed the handle of the bulkhead and attempted to pull it back to little avail. Once more, I attempted to close it and made some form of progress before the wind again launched the door back open. This time, it took me with it, as I lost my footing and slammed onto the exterior deck. The sea had continued to worsen, and to make matters worse, a heavy downpour had begun as well. I cautiously returned to my feet, immediately noticing Carlo at the doorway, steadying himself on the frame as he offered a hand. I took it, and he pulled me back inside, as we collectively managed to pull the door shut and seal it with some effort. Without missing a beat, he slapped my shoulder and nodded down the corridor as he took off. This way, head to the control room, he called behind me. I followed with the turbulence of the waves now slamming me against the walls of the corridor. Still, I kept pace as we made our way through the dimly lit halls of the vessel. We eventually turned a corner, and with a stairwell being immediately visible on our right, Carlo made his way down, and I was about to follow before I paused. Someone was screaming, not inside the ship, but rather outside, considering its dull and muted nature. It was seemingly originating from a nearby bulkhead, which I barely made my way to without wiping out multiple times. I placed my ear on the cold steel of the door and could very clearly make out faint banging on the outside, followed by panicked wailing. Even considering the many unexplainable things I had witnessed, I hesitantly gripped the lever of the door, believing that somehow, some way, a crewmate had gone unaccounted for and was locked outside. And right as I was preparing to open it, however, Carlo appeared behind me and abruptly grabbed me, pulling me back towards the stairwell. As I was about to object, the banging on the outside of the door grew in volume to a deafening series of crashes that echoed through the corridor. The wailing surged as well, becoming profoundly audible through the thick steel bulkhead. At that point, it no longer sounded human, or rather, living, having an unnatural and shrill echo that separated it from something to be expected from a human. Similarly, it began being heard from other parts of the ship. More specifically, every external door or hatch on the ship began producing a similar series of noises. They merged into one, producing a deafening symphony of desperation and crashing. I attempted to cover my ears as we descended into the belly of the ship, with the sounds above eventually fading to a tolerable extent. We entered the engine room, passing the various roaring machines as we made our way into the connected control room. The noise level from the vessel's engines could still be heard through the thick walls, but greatly assisted in blocking the unpleasant crashing from above. And both of us collapsed against the furthest wall as we caught our breath. For another 3 hours, the ship continued to tilt and sway, and we continued to sit in that room without speaking a word. Eventually, the storm subsided, as the vessel gradually began to level out. Carlo checked his watch and stood up, with me doing the same. We returned up the stairs, through the corridors, and back up the stairs leading to the bridge. The door to the bridge was still open, and we made our way in. Lachlan was slumped in his chair, blankly staring at the furthest wall. Having endured that entire ordeal from what was fundamentally the front seat, he weakly waved our way as a greeting before releasing an extended sigh and straightening his posture. "Well, Adrian, how'd you enjoy the morning pass?" he sarcastically asked, seeming to force an attempt at a smile. I shook my head while attempting to formulate even the most remotely coherent thing to say. "Just give me the damn pills next time," I quietly muttered. In response, he raised his index finger and shook his finger side to side in a clear symbol of denial. "Hate to break it to you, son, but that's not exactly an option. You can't. They simply won't let you," he replied, dropping his hand to his side. "I'll save you the explanation. We've already processed enough in such a short time. Go and get some rest now. Wake up calls in a few hours," he nodded, offering a sympathetic smile. With no remaining energy to implore further, I simply turned around and silently exited the bridge. Before I could make it to the stairs, however, he called from behind me yet again. "And Adrian, maybe keep all this to yourself. Best to keep this between the initiated, yeah?" he added with a weak chuckle. I nodded and made my way down the stairs, down the corridor, and back into my bunk. I managed to secure a few hours of rest before I was shaken awake. I groaned and sat up, rubbing my eyes to see Hudson at my bedside. "Almost slept in again, sunshine," he jokingly remarked. He leaned in and took a closer look, with his cheerful expression slowly morphing into visible concern. "Golly, you look like crap. Didn't sleep well?" he questioned. I considered sharing everything that occurred over that night with him, but quickly dismissed the idea. "Yeah, that about sums it up," I weakly replied. He shrugged and began preparing for the shift ahead. I followed suit, throwing my uniform on and went to perform my duties as I did every other day. As for the words of the captain, he wasn't wrong in the slightest. As much as I tried to forget that night, my sleep was invaded by those floating figures. Many nights after I awoke in a cold sweat, my dreams being permeated by the desperate cries of those lost souls that called me on that stretch. Each day after they worsened and worsened, costing hours upon hours of rest. They only subsided, albeit temporarily, upon making that stretch once more. The morning pass was traversed roughly once or more each month on that vessel, and from that point forward, I was awake every single time. 5 years later, I have endured the morning pass exactly 72 times. It never gets easier, but the months with multiple passes through the area were generally the most bearable. Whether this is a cautionary tale or a coping mechanism, I'm personally not quite sure. Regardless, I'll be ending this here for now. In roughly an hour, I'll be making past 73, with plenty more to come. And that's the end of this story. I really hope you enjoyed it. Let me know what you thought in the comments wherever you can, if you can. And a huge shout out to my patrons once again for making this episode possible. If you'd like to support the channel and help ensure the steady goings-on of Stories After Midnight, I'd like to suggest Patreon. If you'd like to come hang out with us, there is a Discord available. We'd love to see you there and chat with you. So whether you do that or you don't, it's totally fine. I just appreciate you listening, and I hope to see you in the next one. Take care now. Bye-bye then.